role of women in American politics is also the subject of a conference that continues today on the University of Arkansas campus. The university's Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and the University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service are co-hosting the fifth symposium in the Blair Legacy Series. Titled 18 Million Cracks, The Legacy of Second Wave Feminism in American Politics, the conference is examining the impact of female leaders in the country beginning in the 1960s. One of the invited scholars at the symposium this week is Marjorie Spruill, a professor of history at the University of South Carolina. She's writing a book that deals, in part, with the long-term ramifications of a particularly interesting time in American history, the 1977 International Women's Year Conference in Houston. The conference was designed to bring women together to forge policy. First ladies, members of Congress, all kinds of people saw the conference as the continuation of a period that had brought women's rights to headline status and brought the Equal Rights Amendment to within a few states' acceptance of becoming law. Marjorie Spruill came to the Carver Center for Public Radio this week and discussed some of the circumstances surrounding that conference in 1977.
And in the 72 Congress, there were more women's rights bills passed, I believe, than in any other time. But nothing so symbolized the widespread support for the women's movement and the sense among politicians that the American public supported it as that overwhelming victory of the ERA in 1972 in Congress. There were very few people that voted against it. And afterwards, the states were scrambling to be the first to ratify. And, you know, it sailed through with many ratifications during the next year and then many more the next year. And by 1975, only four more were needed. Little did people realize that only one more victory would come, and that was Indiana in January of 77. So at the time of the Houston Conference, feminists were concerned. They were still hopeful, and there were fights going on in the 15 unratified states, as they were called. But people were worried, and Phyllis Schlafly and the ERA critics saw the IWI as just an effort to get it through. Schlafly loves alliteration. She's very much part of the political scene today. She said that it was a federally funded festival for frustrated feminists.
She becomes a political superstar out of this, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. She, I think, is not single-handedly responsible for the ERA being defeated and the rise of the conservative wing of the Republican Party in 1980, but it couldn't have happened without her.
And she, in some ways, becomes influential because there were some members of the Republican Party who thwarted her attempt to become the head of the Republican women, right?
Yes. That's one of the great ironies of the whole story was that in the late 60s, she was vice president of the National Federation of Republican Women and was about to rise to the presidency. And her arch enemy, Nelson Rockefeller, and others who were leading the party at the time, that some of them regarded her as largely responsible for Goldwater being nominated in the debacle for the Republican Party in 64, and they saw her as sort of a vestige of old-time anti-communist, far-right republicanism, isolationism. And the last thing they wanted was for her to head up their women's organization, so they kind of engineered an election in which she was narrowly defeated. And after that, she and about 2,000 close supporters went down to the basement of the hotel and started a new women's movement. They wanted it to be nonpartisan so that it wasn't competing with the Republican Party. But on the other hand, that sort of helped make it possible for it to receive all the disgruntled Democrats that would be defecting from the Democratic Party over its liberal policies on civil rights and now on women's rights. And so it really helped to strengthen her movement, which really became during for most of the 70s, a nonpartisan conservative women's movement. It became, however, by 1980, it was embraced largely by the Republican Party, which saw through this so-called pro-family movement a way to become the majority party.
Marjorie Spruill is a professor of history at the University of South Carolina, and she's one of the speakers at the symposium 18 Million Cracks, the Legacy of Second-Wave Feminism in American Politics, that is continuing today at the University of Arkansas campus and sponsored by the Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and the University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service. There will be more from our conversation on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large.